Blog Talk Radio.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of One-on-One with Jasper Cole. This is Mr. Jasper Cole, your host, and we are live, and I am live in Palm Springs, California, and it's our usual Thursday night live show. And if you're listening to this on an archive show, it could be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're just so happy you're listening. Please go on to Facebook and you can follow us there, or Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Jasper Cole Says, S-A-Y-S, or jaspercole.com, and there's a link for One-on-One with Jasper Cole. It's been an amazing week. So much to talk about, and I couldn't do it without my co-pilot, the one and only Mr. Ralph Cole Jr.
Hello, Jasper. Hello, Planet Eartha.
Ralph, I have to tell you, so we're all excited because our special guest today is actor, singer, Calvin Orlando Smith, who is a native Athenian like myself, and we both grew up in Athens. We went to different high schools. We briefly connected right after high school, right before we both kind of launched our theatrical careers. But if there's another African-American talent who has your energy, Ralph, and your passion and your enthusiasm, it's Calvin Orlando Smith. So I'm so happy you guys are going to meet today.
I am so excited. Just watching his reels and his footage, he is just a whole world unto himself.
A fabulosity.
He is a fabulosity. He is Planet Eartha, just it squared. And I prepared something, Jasper.
Yes.
You're not going to put your knee on my neck no more. You showed your true color. Now we know the score. No knee on my neck. Ace of spades from the deck. That's a telling sign. You're not gonna put your knee on my neck this time.
In honor of George Floyd, every person that has died at the hands of police brutality, bravo, brava, and that was beautiful, Ralph.
Thank you, Jasper. I've been so moved by everything that has gone on in the news for the past few months, of course, but then it culminated on this past Saturday, after the Saturday after election night. And you and I have had such passionate conversations about so many things, and because we both talk about our binariness and how things happen in society and the culture that, you know, we're just not happy with. And so this song came out of me like that, because I just felt like we all did. It was truly a lyric from The Wiz. Can you feel a brand new day? And as soon as I heard the news, I felt like, yes, I can feel a brand new day. It actually seems tangible now, a brand new day.
Oh, my God. Doesn't it just seem – I know we did a show, you know, Monday night with Mike Manning. So we've celebrated a little bit, but it's like even just in the 8 days it's been since the election, or there's just such a lightness. I notice I'm just not as anxious, and I don't know. It's just like there's definitely something's been lifted, like a big cloud.
Yeah, I totally feel that way. And I'm not being wholly naive in that, oh, just because this new administration is taking place, everything is hunky-dory. Everything is more fucked than ever. You know, I mean, we're about to have more corona. It's just, it's going to be a dismal time for everybody, and that's just being saying it as pleasantly as possible. I want to bring note, I want to bring life to the fabulous essay written by Calvin Orlando Smith in Firing Donald Trump, and I thought that shit was so fucking fierce. That was so prolific and so fierce. So that needs to be made into a song, that duet, a duet that Calvin and I will perform. But no, he hit on some really just such salient points, points that any normal person would agree with. So I want to thank you, Jasper, for always giving me a vehicle to do whatever I want to do for Planet Earth on this show. I wanted to prepare that piece for you, which there's it's a work in progress, but I wanted to debut it on our show because our
your
show
voice
is,
will be heard too, goddamn.
Oh yes, damn it, yeah, you know that to be true. And speaking of that, this is a horrible segue and plug for us, but I know that,
right turn.
Okay, I'm glad you had on your shoulder belt too, girl, because yeah, I'm
waiting for that airbag to deploy at any moment. I will sue your AAA insurance will be suing your ass, your binary ass. And don't ask why my policy is different than yours. Planet Earth, that's a whole other private inside joke. But
oh my God.
Let me just say, okay, so Ralph and I are both extremely binary. Now, I think Ralph will agree. He's a little bit more than me because at times I have to even say to Ralph, okay, Ralph, we're both in the weeds right now of binariness. So let's try to step out of this sometimes. So I like how we have to call each other out on being binary.
Oh my goodness. It is so hilarious. And I don't like to do that thing I don't want to exclude anyone, and that's why I'm glad Jasper just explained it to Planet Eartha what our inside joke was, because you'll hear it also when we talk about boomerangs too. That shit is funny. We just have funny things with each other that, you know, because
well, let me just say, for example, like I'll say to Ralph and I'll be talking, and I'll say, well, you know, the COVID test, blah blah blah, it says, you know, it's pretty general knowledge that it's 67%. Who says that? Where did you see that? And I'm like, well, it's it was on this one. Well, but I read a different article. I'm like, right. So it could be two opinions, but you generally take the majority of the opinions. Well, I don't understand then. I mean, if it's just, and why is one thing different than the other? And I'm like, okay, so now I'm going to be the voice of reason. That's like Helen Keller and Stevie Wonder driving the car of binariness.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to get out of my binariness to explain to you why
and I am
not
just
so black and white.
I am
and Ralph is just hunkered down. He'll say, he'll have a question for that question. Like, well,
how motherfucking rapid was it? How rapid was your fucking test? Okay.
and it's funny because I can hear like the disappointment in your voice. So then I get pulled into trying to make you feel better. So I start trying to come up with answers that I think will make you feel better. So it's like,
that's good. And you should start your day like that with like some people start with affirmations. You should start your day with, how can I make Ralph happy today? What kind of things can I say and possibly do that will enhance Ralph's life and make him laugh and shine
I just erringly thought the fact that I still, you know, returned your texts would be enough, but I guess
well,
you're or at least I talk to you on the phone. I don't just text.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I know, because you're deeper. You're a healer. No, you're a healer. But what I was going to say.
Well, our friendship is a little more than just a text and a Facebook and a.
I think
message.
I believe that too. Send a fax, bitch, and wear a swim cap. But what I was trying to
call
say.
Call me from wardrobe.
Okay, get me on a trampoline, girl. Okay,
Davina.
Because
How is Davina?
Oh, she is fabulous. We talk almost every day. Okay, so that's
in fact, we'll just do the whole opening with nothing but inside comments.
Inside jokes.
That the audience has no idea. They're not listening. There's only three people listening, and they're high or they're in rehab.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and Dara is probably one of them. You know, and Dara used to be on our show. I wish Dara would call back in tonight. That would have been fun. But what I've been trying to say to Planet Earth was that Jasper and I had the wonderful honor of being on Howard Kasner's radio podcast. And it's been a long time since Jasper and I have done an interview together. And I'm mentioning it now, Jasper, because I saw you posted it on Instagram. Our interview was fierce.
You were going to ask me if I listened to it, weren't you?
No, I was.
Were you about to say, "Did I listen to it?"
No, I was going to say, "Did you get your coffee for the show?" Is what I was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's called. But by the way, it's called Pop Art, and it's Howard Kasner, and you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. But make sure you listen to ours first, and then listen to his. But but it's very good. No, it's so what he does is he has his guest pick a film, and then he tries to pick a film with a similar theme but an opposing style, I guess. And then we come together and we discuss the two films. And Ralph, we picked Bridesmaids and he picked Monsoon Wedding, and then we proceeded to, you know, break it apart and give our opinions of it. It was fun.
Yeah, we were so lively, and it was just, you know, and it was. I think you said it on his interview. One reason why you wanted to start doing your radio show 10 years ago was to let the planet know, like, there was more than you than just this grim, dark side.
Serial killer,
bad, Hollywood's bad guy, you know, and that really deep down.
But is there really, after 10 years, is the verdict end on that or out on that? Is there really another side? Has anyone decided?
There really is. And when we've had a personal conversation, I said, God, you know, what a shame the planet can't see this side of you, you know, because there are some lovely moments. And then we go back to reality. So it's all fine. But, you know.
But you have to say, you have to, everyone out there, please, you have to notice my Facebook posts have changed. I am pro-Biden Harris. I am all about the future. You will notice there will never be a post that mentions, you know, whose name or anything about the past. Everything is about moving forward and President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. So I feel so much better that I start my day off with a positive post and not anything negative.
You see, that's what you said earlier. It's like you wake up feeling a little bit lighter, and it's just a nice feeling. And that's the thing, and I'm really glad to have this balance. I'm not like, oh, my God, like I'm repeating myself, but it bears repeating. I am not being a Pollyanna about it, but it's just not. And because the thing is, Jasper, no matter what the election outcome was going to be, there was going to be upheaval in every fucking city, you know, pro and con. And like I said, Joe and Kamala have a lot of shit to deal with when they walk in. I hope they can rent a bungalow or get a Lyle wagon or a star trailer.
Oh my God. Hold on. Let me go back to the 70s. You have dropped the dead name of a former Carol Burnett star, Lyle Wagner, who created Star Wagons. Go ahead.
Exactly. And I worked with Lyle. So I, you know, it's fun to mention him. But
Planet Earth, for our new listeners, that was called a boomerang. He just brought it back to himself. That's what we call a boomerang. Yeah.
As it always should be. I know. Well, you know, you're going to start waking up and, you know, creating ways to make me happy throughout the day, which is great because you are so busy. Jasper, talk about a hyphenate. He wears so many hats, but whatever. He's fierce. We're here with you, Planet Eartha. We are going to have a fabulous show.
We're
going
to go longer today because Calvin and I had a brief conversation on the phone last night because, you know, I don't normally talk to the guests before, but I haven't talked to Calvin other than, you know, Facebook in all these years. And so but the moment we jumped in, we started, I was like, no, don't tell me that. Save it for the show, you know, and I called Ralph and I was like, okay, buckle up and get ready because it's going to be joyous ride, and the conversation is going to flow. So, everyone, we're going to probably run over past seven. So if you want to hang with us, just know that we're probably going to go longer tonight. So, which is great.
Yay. Yeah, it's so much fun. I mean, Calvin, we are so happy to welcome you to our show because we have so many diverse people on the show and so many great stories. And yours is just adding to that prestigious list. And, you know, what better time to welcome Calvin to our show when things are so optimistic and he's
right.
So bubbly and uplifting. Mm-hmm. And not to say, and I haven't met Calvin yet, but that's not to say we are deeply realistic about the situations that are going on. But how nice is it to deal with these problems that we still have, knowing that we have some leadership that actually just cares about another human being and won't push you in front of the train, you know? So
right.
It's
right. And, you know, to your point, I mean, when Obama, don't forget, you know, Obama inherited the 8 years of the George Bush, you know, financial crisis and disaster, and Biden was right there along the way. So if anybody can step in and Kamala Harris, you know, basically was our attorney general. So she ran the largest state government in America. So she's already dealt with all kinds of crisis. And she also put up with fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger as the governor for a while. But before we bring Calvin on, I wanted to just say to everyone that there's some Athens friends that are tuning in tonight.
Great.
And I'm going to use their maiden name. So it's Nancy Birch, hopefully Paula McGill, Judy Pitts, and any other friends of ours from high school, because as I mentioned, before we bring Calvin on, I want to give a little setup. So, you know, we had two high schools. We had Clark Central and we had Cedar Shoals. And even though Athens is not a big town, one was in what's called East Athens and the other was West Athens, I guess. And so, you know, it wasn't that far apart, but it was just kind of like, you know, you kind of didn't always meet people from different parts of town. And so, but because Calvin was so fierce and such a musical talent and a theatrical talent while he was in Athens and in high school and doing the Town and Gown Theater, which is the local theater in Athens, I knew of him because as I told him last night, and as you know, Ralph, I was like a closeted thespian, meaning I wanted to be an actor, but I went the route of the sports and, you know, that whole part of school, but I was a secret thespian in heart, but I would follow the local production. So I knew of Calvin very well. Then when I finally met Calvin, he had this great thing called Putting on the Ritz Party at this great house he had on a street called Boulevard in Athens. And those of you who know Athens, but they're these great antebellum houses that, of course, growing up there, I just took for granted. You know, looking back now, it's like you just grow up around these great old houses. It's kind of like West Adams Avenue,
right.
Ralph. You know,
right. That community.
Yeah, you just kind of don't even think about the history. But Calvin's been fabulous from day one. But, you know, I was Chuck Malcolm back then. I had not changed my name. No one knew I wanted to be an actor. So we met briefly. We just knew each other for a moment. I, of course, made a beeline for California, Calvin, as he will tell us. But here's the interesting thing. We both got to the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. As you know, Ralph, that's where I met Becky. Well, Becky and I knew each other, but that's where we got together. We wrote Willow Springs, got it produced in Atlanta, and then off to California.
And you met Brooks Ann there too.
Well, I met Brooks Ann in L.A. Doing Willow Springs. But Calvin will tell us, he, on the other hand, he went to the Alliance as a performer, and that's where he was in some amazing productions. And from there, his career soared all over the world. But I think at that point, or at this point, it's the perfect time to bring onto the show our very special guest. Please welcome Mr. Calvin Orlando. Howdy, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. That piped-in applause reminded me of the moment Joan Crawford won her Oscar for Mildred Pierce, and she refused to go to the Pantages that evening because she didn't want to lose in public. And then when they called her name out, she won, and she quickly threw on a face, ran out onto the front porch where a few paparazzi had appeared, and she said in her bathrobe, "I'd rather be here with you than anywhere else on Earth." Is that great?
Well,
yeah, so she didn't want to lose in public, and they call her name. She's like, I've got to give myself to my public.
Oh, my God. So, Calvin, meet Ralph. Say hello, guys.
Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Calvin.
Hello, Ralph.
Welcome to our show. I am so excited to meet you and hear your stories.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have very much time.
Okay.
I already go on and on. I already told the audience in the beginning that we know we're gonna go a little longer tonight because we have we have you and we have so many fabulous stories. So hopefully people will stay on, and if not, this just a reminder, everyone, the show gets archived on iTunes and iHeart and Spotify. But I want to give a shout out to all of our listeners who might be tuning in from Athens, Georgia, or all over the South. Hi to everybody. I know it's taken 35 years for Calvin and I to get together, but here we are, finally. And I'm planning on, I want to work with Calvin from Newman Thomas Management, and we hope to work together from here on out. But Calvin, I was just mentioning that you were quite the superstar in Athens long before I met you, and we both kind of went to the Alliance Theater. But tell us, for our listeners, how that was. You also had performed at the Crystal Pistol, which was Six Flags Over Georgia, before you got to the Alliance Theater.
Yeah, I was 18. I turned 19 at Six Flags, and where I've made a lot of great friends, and I'm still lifelong friends with a lot of them, including the woman who was my partner, Joanna Greenlee. I recently saw her in Argentina, where she sings. It was very difficult for us on many levels. One, a producer didn't like us. He was forced by the inner offices to hire some ethnic or African-American children because they had gone 3 years without seeing, black kids who, as the complainers would say, if we can't play basketball and sing and dance, what the hell are we supposed to do? And so finally the producer knew that he had to hire two, because they had to be partnered together, black kids. And it was really brutal. It was really cruel. I mean, when you're that young, you need someone to help you and not critique you so viciously. And then also, in that same time, I was driving back and forth to Atlanta. I had an apartment in Mapleton, one in downtown Atlanta. But this is at the very point that Wayne Williams was hunting young people. And I feel certain at one point, during one Saturday afternoon, because you see his face very distinctive, I could swear I saw a man sitting in the audience watching the show in the Crystal Pistol, which was called In the Good Old Summertime. But yes, he was actually, he staged himself as a kind of talent scout, and you know what happened to all 29 of those children.
Right.
So I was navigating that landscape because we found another body, and I was in the age of the type that he was hunting. So I believe that, God was really with me and with Joanna and protected us from a lot of racism and even death. It was really hard. But, you make it out of that. And the next year, I finished 82. 83, I went in audition for a production of The Pirates of Penzance at the Alliance. And I got cast as a pirate and policeman. In order to view the show, I had to join the union. Of course, here in L.A., you belong to AFTRA and SAG, the union that governs the professional actors and stage managers in America. It's called Equity. So,
yes.
But once I did first was Pirates of Penzance, I did a string of shows there that were amazing. If you have an opportunity to ever work at a great professional regional theater, these theaters are great. And every year the Tony Committee picks one regional theater in America to award its a regional Tony. And the Alliance has won it. The Goodwin has won it. Fifth Avenue in St. Louis, the Actors Theater of Louisville. So it's very prestigious because you're competing against all of the regional theaters in the country. And it was really nice to get my union card and work around such properties. Because to this day, I've never experienced costumes and sets like they do in Atlanta at the Alliance Theater. They spare no expense And I just, actually, there was in the opera there with Keith David, who was is a graduate of Juilliard. He does the voiceovers for Ken Burns' documentary. It's always his voice. In the remake of The Thing by John Carpenter, he played Childs at the end, if you haven't picture him. But he played Mackie in a redreaming of The Thing in the Opera, which was set in Harlem and New York in the 1930s. And instead of being in, the, you know, in England and Queen Victoria's messenger arriving to save Mackie, it was LaGuardia's messenger. The moon over Soho transferred to Solo in New York, and the set around this redreaming of Bertolt Brecht's penny opera was genius. Polly Peachum was played by Kay McClellan, and she had blonde pink curls, made with trencher, and so much white light coming down on that blonde wig to show contrast between her being this kind of porcelain doll and Mackie as this dark major criminal in New York City. But they spent $800,000 on that set. I mean, there was an electric chair to electrocute Mackie that went 30 feet, it was on a hydraulic lift, on a pole, went 30 feet up in the air while he was singing his final soliloquy. And then at that moment, the stage opened up in a 1933 cream-colored, leathered, convertible Packard rolled towards the audience. It was outrageous.
That's amazing.
So the Lions Theater was a great place to become a union actor because they the properties, the costumes, the sets are unparalleled.
And let me ask you, was it from the Alliance that you then ended up doing Peter Pan? Is that where you next went?
I was doing the most imaginative Christmas performance that I've ever seen. Most people every year, including the Alliance Theater, they restage the Christmas Carol, or, you know, the Dickens' Christmas show with the Scrooge. They do this every year. They do it every year. But that one year, Fran Soher, who had been protege to Stephen Sondheim, who had an amazing childlike imagination, got with the set designer, James Leonard Joy, who does the sets for the New York City, what's it called? Not carnival, I think it's zoo. Well, they do, you know, with a big top, but he designed all those circus wagons and all of that. Anyway, he was the set designer for Peter Pan at the Alliance. And this set was so alive, so imaginative. It just brought out the best in you with your performance. I had pompous friends moving around me as my pirate went to, you know, kidnap the Lost Boys. But it was amazing. I did it with Anne Morrison, who was in the original production of Merrily We Roll Along, but Fran Soder was getting ready to go to Miami to do a production of Peter Pan with Kathy Rigby. And there was whispers of her, because she was so good, that they would eventually take it to Broadway. And I said, my God, I'd love to come with you. So I went down and performed Checo, which I had done at the Alliance Theater, in the summer of 89. Summer of 89. At Miami Beach, you know, lived right there on the beach, did performance, I gave everything. And every night, Kathy would come against the stage left, come against the proscenium at stage left, wearing her coat, her cloak, because she's getting ready to store aboard the pirate ship and, you know, and kill all the pirates. She would get right against the proscenium and watch me do Checo's Fall, which happens is he's the toughest, meanest, and this is why I love you, Jasper, because you know how to play a mean guy and a villain. And so this part was the most cutthroat of them all. And so at this one moment, Captain Hook turns to Checo and says, Checo, fetch me the doodle-doo, meaning run down into the face of sure death, because pirates, they are suspicious. And when they hear this crowing beneath the whole boat, they know that it's some kind of ocean specter that means them doom and horror. So he, of course, hears the voice. Captain Hook says, go and fetch me the doo-doo. And I would just fall apart and go, no, Captain, no. And I fall to my knees, trembling all the way. And he takes the hook to my nose. Neck, and I go, all right. You know? And I'd run in and you hear a few seconds, ah! You know, of course, where Peter Pan has knocked me off. But she watched me do Checo's Fall every night for over a month. Every night, I thought, I'm getting ready to get fucking fired from this show. He said, why is she taking that position to watch me do this? And what she was doing was she would think, can we do that every night for 8 shows a week for the next 2.5 years? And
wow.
I guess she was a bit right. So when it was all over, and you can imagine, it was the funniest thing, performing in Miami Beach, because all the men there, bushes, all had plastic surgery and implants to give themselves a little dimple in their cheek. After the show, we would all go down and get into the ocean because the water of Miami is very healing, and that's warm, and it's salt. So after you've been swimming, and you get a little bit in your nose, or just a little bit that, you know, you take in your mouth, the salt is very good for someone who's been singing and acting so much. So we would go down, a group of us, and these guys all had to stand up by the outdoor bar looking down because they couldn't come into the sun to swim with the star. Meanwhile, we're all swimming. Of course, we're bonding. We're telling stories. It's amazing. It's great. We're in the middle of the warmth. And like, oh, shit, and you can look back and see these men
right.
desperate to be with us. But they couldn't join. We're all in the swell. Yeah, but anyway, after it was said and done, after they had all auditioned, going crazy, trying to get in the next show, I wasn't. I just put Checo. I had just done it in an amazing production at Alliance, so I brought all of that back, even though they were all doing something else. And when it was all over with, we were out at an outdoor by the pool late at night. It was the last night. We're all leaving Miami. And all of a sudden, Kathy Rigby and her husband, Tom McCoy, walked right up to me, and they said, "We're doing the national tour of Peter Pan. The auditions will be October 13th in Los Angeles. You've been wonderful. We would love to see you there." And I said, and they both turned and walked away from me. And so, yeah, so I had to go to Los Angeles. This is a grueling series of auditions because the choreographer didn't know me. She had fallen in love with me, but the star and her husband had. And,
right.
You know, I got, when I left coming home to Georgia, Athens, there was that earthquake in 1989 in San Francisco.
Oh,
when
God,
the plane took off, as the plane took off, the pilot says, "There's been an earthquake in San Francisco and Oakland." I'm like, "Oh, my God." So I got home. I actually ignored an invitation to do Annie Get Your Gun at the Alliance Theater because I was hopeful that that would be successful. So I got home and I opened the mail saying, "We don't hear from you by this date. Consider your contract with Annie Get Your Gun null and void." So I was like, "Oh my God, I lost this show." You know, that knowing. And then my mother came down the hall and she said, "How did it go?" I said, "I don't know. I made it to the last group of 12 guys and they said they'd call us in a week or two." And I just don't know. My mother said, "I know. They called and said, you've got the job."
Oh, my goodness.
So they had called my mother while I was in the air. So they tell Calvin he's going to Neverland. So it was everything you can imagine. You know, it's everything
well,
you can
imagine. Well, I want to jump in and tell everyone that Kathy Rigby, for all our young listeners, was an Olympic gymnast. She was kind of like the Mary Lou Retton before, you know, of the late 60s. But Kathy and her husband, you know, had a great – I don't know, do they still have their theater in Orange County here?
Absolutely. McCoy Rigby Entertainment. They're still producing shows. They just did Grumpy Old Men with Ken Page and Kathy playing the neighbor. So, yeah, it's La Mirada.
La Mirada.
That's La Mirada. That's where they're located. And
yeah,
they do
amazing,
they got
beautiful productions. Yeah, beautiful productions there. Well, see, yeah. I mean, Ralph grew up in Los Angeles, and then he decided to move to New York. So what year, Ralph, did you go to New York?
1979, after I graduated from college.
Wow, you were right there when they were doing a Chorus Line, which is my favorite.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
that's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, the Chorus Line is my show. Yeah, Hamilton is for this generation, but my show is for my generation. Of course, there's other musicals I love, and my favorite being Gypsy. But the show that nurtured me when I was in that period of awakening and developing into a fully formed artistic being, A Chorus Line was there for me.
My goodness.
And, you know, and what's so rich about that show is it's nothing but dancing, singing, acting. There's no set. You've got to really write something. The music by Marvin Hamlisch must be evocative because there's nothing to look at. And I think Miranda took that in consideration with the set for Hamilton. Because if it was anything that was not, you know, right for that thing, it wouldn't work. All of it had to work without set.
Ralph, did you know Michael Bennett, Ralph, at all in New York? Did you have any?
I didn't know him personally. I like you, Calvin, I loved A Chorus Line. I had the album, and I remember in college. Yeah. I graduated from Pomona in 79, so from 77 to 79, I would play those songs over and over and over again, and, of course, knew every song, right? So,
yes.
And it was the same for me in The Wiz and Andre the Shield. When
Yes. Well, Stephanie Mills, that voice.
Yes.
Stephanie Mills blowing out home. Oh, my God. You know that audition. When she auditioned for The Wiz, she went, it was like final day, her brother took her there, insisting that she go. She went and blew out some gospel number. They all sat there. And then she, you know, they he said, thank you, Stephanie. She walked out of the room. She said, see, that was a waste of time. And they got on the train, went back home, because this is before cell phones. And when they got home, there was a message on their answering machine saying, where did you go? Come back. We want to talk to you. And they went back down and said, we want you to be Dorothy. Yeah. So that's, yeah,
oh,
that's how
God.
Stephanie Mills became
Dorothy.
Wow. She sang and walked out and left. Where'd you go?
Talk about Jasper, like you say, you know, just audition and forget about it. She really did. It was like, bye. You know?
Right. Just leave it. Leave it at the door. Leave it on the floor and walk out. You know. And think about it. Remember, like you're saying, we had we didn't have cell phones. We had, maybe we had a pager then, but there were no emails.
Yeah.
No emails.
Yeah.
You know, probably pay phone.
Yeah, she had a recording. I first went to New York when I got my first tour, which is right before Peter Pan started in 89. This was in 86. I came to New York and got in a big tour of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes at Morgan Fairchild. This thing had 30 Broadway stars in it, including the woman who played Marion Harrelson, who was, no, not that. That's, I think, the lady from Happy Days. I can't think of the actress who
Marion
played. That's Marion Ross. Got it. Marion Ross. This Marion Harrelson was a woman who had been in, wait for it, 32 Broadway musicals.
Okay.
She was this old grand dame, and she was perfect playing Lady Deepland. But it also had P.J. Benjamin in it, who got the Tony Award from a Sophisticated Lady. It had John O'Hurley, who was the MC on Family Feud. It had played Morgan Glover. It had P.J. Benjamin from Sophisticated Lady. Deborah Phelan from Lacage. And Debbie Shapiro opposite Morgan Fairchild, who went on to win the Tony Award for Jerome Robbins Broadway. So this thing, Peter Fitch, who played Rooster in the original Annie. This show was so star-studded. I can't even tell you. Robert Ray, who was in Oklahoma on Broadway and is a big cabaret artist now in Atlanta. I was traveling the nation with some of the biggest names in the industry, and also we were all doing this kind of tour. It was amazing because at one point we performed in a lot of amphitheaters, including Starlight in Kansas City. I just remember the conversations on the bus taking us back to our hotel, which was in downtown Kansas City. But the kind of feeling that you would have on a bus riding through part of Middle America, I immediately could connect with like jazz performers who traveled in. You were going to the hotel, you were leaving the venue, and sun was setting. You could see the Art Deco pinnacles above Kansas City, which is a celebration of Art Deco architecture. If you're into it, go to Kansas City. Anyway, but going back and just listening to all of it, everyone talk. Peter Fitch, who won the Tony Award for playing Rooster in Annie with the song Easy Street. Took attack lessons from him while we were out on the road. So this thing, that one show, was so sensational because, and all kinds of stars came to see it because Morgan Fairchild was playing the Lorelai Lee role. And it was amazing. So that was in 86. So that was my first experience in New York. I come to New York, not only to audition, but we rehearsed there before we went around the nation.
Tell everybody, Calvin, talk to the young actors listening about, you know, the bus and truck, as they call it. I mean, you had such an illustrious, all these years that you were touring, you really didn't have a need to put down roots in one city because you would be out on the road and back onto another production.
Those things that kind of settling has happened to a bit here because I have a home in Eugene. I've been here for 10 years. At my age, I don't see myself doing any long national tours, but not to cut from the past, but to cut to the future right now. I just came back from Maui yesterday from doing Songs of a New World, you know, of course, written by, what's his name? I'll say his name is, I can't remember. Jason Robert Brown. I always put that last name, Jason Brown, but it's Jason Robert Brown, who wrote the last 5 years, Parade, the Bridges of Madison County, and he's right now developing his new musical, Farewell My Concubine. And he writes in a really amazing way. The music's beautiful, the lyrics are evocative. I was directed by David Johnstone, and the musical director was by Vanya Jerome. And with the way that they're doing productions there, and I would say this to all your guests, if you are in the Hawaiian Islands and you so happen to find yourself in Maui, check out performances with the Maui Academy of Performing Arts. You won't be disappointed. I did The Hunchback of Notre Dame there in 2017, once again directed by David Johnstone, terrific director. He actually, out here in Oregon, got his master's in acting and drama from the University of Oregon. So did Fritz Holtz. Fritz Holt, who directed me in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, who was a stage manager, but then became a director, he produced Angela Lansbury in her world tour of Gypsy, which started in the West End of London, and then she stayed all around America. And I saw her do it in 1979 at the Atlanta Civic Center. And watching Angela Lansbury play Rose, it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. And her daughter, Deirdre Shaw, was Gypsy Rose Lee. Fritz Holtz and the director David Johnstone both are graduates in the theater department here at the U of O. It's a small planet. But I just did Songs for a New World. I performed the role of Man 2. And it's a four-person musical. It was filmed live stream, and it broadcast last week in Hawaiian Standard Time hours. So no one could stay up. But hold your horses. It's now being loaded up for pay-per-view, and it should be ready in the next few days. And if you want to see a fabulous production by a wonderful company named the Maui Academy of Performing Arts, they have many benefactors and have such a supportive, creative team there. I would highly suggest taking in some of their shows. I did Hunchback, and I just last week did a Songs for a New World. So I'm really blessed in my life with my age that I'm still able to work and find new things and just
well, go in you know ways. What you're a testament of is you have you've always gotten work based on your work, and work has gotten you more work. And like you mentioned, this one guy was a stage manager, and then he became a director. And you said to me one time you really never had to rely on having an agent or a manager because you just got. Jobs came to you based on work. Now, do you guys think that's still the case, like today in say New York?
Oh, no, I think that if you have ambitions of going, as far as you could go, and even making it to Hollywood and making the shows, the only way to really do that is with a management team. Absolutely, I get it. I just, for me, and that would be lovely if something like that could start happening, but for me, it's always been about the art. It's always been about giving a character a beginning, a middle, and end. And a lot of times people say, well, why don't you do film? I said, well, I'm not averse to doing it. But the one thing I do know with the things that I filmed, whether it be a national tour of Adidas commercial while I was in Canada, this stuff is stop and start, reassembled in a different way. We're going to film the ending right now.
Right.
You've already been raped. We'll go back and film that later.
But okay.
at this point, I don't want to see any of that because we're going to film that in 2 days. So that idea of taking a story and the action of a piece and disassembling it, it's why I'm a film aficionado. I love the film. I even go so far as putting cold cream on my face and eating popcorn during the Oscars. In pajamas.
Okay.
Pajamas, a popcorn, and a face full of cold cream.
And I know you wake up in the morning with a sink full of ice, and you just plunge your hands in that ice and bring it up to your face, darling, and say, good morning, Galvin. Good morning, world.
I love it. My favorite is the film Sunset Boulevard. Gloria Swanson go through all that grueling torture to make herself look young before she drove back to the studios. I go and watch it. They're like slapping her and wrapping her in towels and putting her in bathtubs full of ice. Anything to bring back that youthful glow. And when she gets to the lot, all they want is her car. Have you never seen Sunset Boulevard?
Many times.
It's fabulous. Glenn Close is getting ready to film it
I know. It's going to be amazing.
Halted it because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well,
so after,
Glenn was so great in the musical, you know, the stage production as well. Quick little side note: Ralph knows that for many years, Faye Dunaway was our next door neighbor, and she. Do you remember, guys, when she was supposed to take over for Glenn Close? She was going to step into the role and play replace Glenn Close, and Andrew Lord Webber. Yes, and Andrew Lord
in
Webber
Sunset.
Fired. Oh, was that? Yeah, in Sunset. Yeah,
okay.
And Andrew.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, apparently, you know, after she rehearsed for a number of weeks, about 2 weeks before opening, and remember, they were paying her a bloody fortune, and they had already pre-sold tickets. He fired her ass, and she sued, and of course, never could reveal how much money. But quick little story, years later, I was working on a movie called MacGruber, and Will Forte, the lead actor, he was sitting at rehearsal one day. Okay, so Will played, you know, the lead, and he was telling us about when he used to be the Manny. He was Faye Dunaway's son, Liam's, like, nanny, you know.
That's great.
And one day she asked him to go out and clean out the inside of her car, the glove compartment, and he was cleaning it out, and he found a cassette, and it said Sunset Boulevard rehearsals, and so he stole the tape basically.
He kept it. Oh my God!
And years later, when he got the job on Saturday Night Live, he took it to work one day, and he played it, and it sounded like cats being skinned alive on. And they laughed, and every time a new host would come on for that week, they had to sit down and they'd say, Will, play the Faye Dunaway tape. And they said it was the worst thing you could ever imagine. And I had bought tickets to see that, but...
Oh, my God.
That's an example where, you know... Well, what do you think, Calvin, about the productions where they, you know... They bring in, like, say, the Morgan Fairchild to sell tickets, or they bring in the TV film name, you know, who maybe doesn't have the chops or the experience.
Yeah, but sometimes they really do. Like that production of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, John O'Hurley, who was the MC on Family Feud for years before Steve Harvey, he sang beautifully, and he was a television on soap operas. I worked with a big soap opera star. Her name was Victoria Mallory. He played Leslie, the concert pianist.
On Another World.
It was Young and the Restless, was it? Young and the Restless.
Yes, you're right.
She, let me tell you, Victoria Mallet, she's dead now from cancer.
I know, she
but
passed
I,
away.
Every once in a while, you'll come across a star that is all that and the bag of chips and pork rinds. Let me tell you.
She
not only could sing, she could dance like you would believe. She could play the concert piano, and she could act. Doing My Fair Lady with her was like, and then I also did it with Marla Schaffel, who was Jane Eyre on Broadway. So I did it with a lot of women. I did a tour of My Fair Lady. I did a lot of tours. The last tour that I was in, which was grueling, a friend of mine told me. I was leaving Neverland. Her name was Shaw Ramsey. She was married to a guy named Barry Ramsey, who he was in On Your Toes on Broadway, and he since has died. And she was a dancer also. They lived in L.A., and when she found out, because I had done Peter Pan with her husband, when she found out I had been cast in the next tour by the Nederlanders and the companies in New York that I was getting ready to do with Vita, she said, Calvin, be very careful with that show. I couldn't perform for 4 years afterwards. I'm like, you're crazy. I'm getting ready to do this amazing drama. I'm escaping Neverland. It's going to be about people living, you know, surviving in Argentina. It's going to be like, you know, this big opera. She was absolutely right. It was the kind of thing, when you do that show and perform that show over and over, it all starts with the Requiem at the very beginning, and you're blowing kisses into a coffin as you represent the lines that circled that sterling silver coffin back when she died. They had the crowds were so deep, they had to sustain the people with army field kitchens, and I mean, the procession went on for days. Not even Kennedy got something. Commerce stopped for 15 days. They just didn't do anything. They put black flags on everything. You know, their actress, And that takes us where we are today. Who hadn't learned the lines you'd like to hear, as she says to her enemies in his brilliant sound, score. Evita was a really, really hard show. And afterwards, I didn't perform for 4 years. So Shaw Newman told me, she said, listen, after you do that show, you're not going to perform for a while. And it's just it's so, you know, a lot of whiteouts, a lot of information about how these people were, you know, the songs led to how these peasants were begging Sancho and Evita to save them. Meanwhile, the two of them were, you know, like a couple I know right now, were robbing the Colberts, hiding the money in European bank accounts. Ava Perón's fame rainbow tour of Europe wasn't so much about her walking around and the new Diors that she had discovered. It was about hiding German and Nazi gold in accounts that has still not been accounted for. You know,
right.
So that country was rich. It was rich on beef before they, you know, moved anything. But they had one of the world's largest diamond reserves. Wait for it. There are no diamond mines. I mean, not gold. Gold reserves. There are no gold mines, but they've got all that gold. So, you know, you found the corruption. I met a doctor who met Juan Perón when he was on his way back to Argentina to participate in trying to be elected president again. And he was carrying the body of Eva Perón. And they would keep this mummy's body either on the dining room table or somewhere upstairs in the house. I mean, it's just shocking. And at one point, Juan Perón had his mystic to lie down on top of he had his second wife, Isabella, to lie down on top of, we don't know if she was in the coffin or not, but on top of her. And as she was lying on top of the corpse of Eva Perón, which was embalmed like a shoe, his mystic walked around the table chanting incantations, hoping that the magical vibrations of Evita would prove transferable. They did not. When he got down there, they ousted Juan Perón, and then Isabella ran to president and won, and then they ousted her. And then finally, 13 years later, they presented the body of Eva Duarte Perón to a group of her brothers and sisters, and they finally interned her remains into that graveyard in Buenos Aires. It's all more shocking than you can even imagine. And because of what I'm describing, after I did the Evita, I didn't perform for 4 years. It's like,
well,
okay,
let me ask you, so, because, you know, as actors, we have many times when we're not working. Have you had what's called what's called the survivor jobs, or, you know,
even more than that? What happened to me? Listen to what happened. While I was doing Evita, and there's no reflection on any specific person, but I started to feel like it was very empty and vapid. We were doing the same thing over and over every night. I wasn't being fulfilled intellectually. So what happened is, when I was I was undergraduate at the University of Georgia, but because I was working on the road doing shows, I was slowly taking correspondence class, class da, da, da. So at one point when I was taking a class, I worked at the library of the University of Georgia, and I fell in love with the art folios. As I was learning of the great sculptors, architects, and painters I was in, and I realized I wanted to become an art historian because it's just magnificent. And so I started studying art history, but then I was back on the road. During Evita, I realized this world is vain and vapid. I would run into the dressing room with a newspaper. It says, my God, a bomb just went off in the Golan Heights, and both Palestinian and Israeli children are killed. And one of the actors, literally putting on eyeliner, said, oh, my God, that's terrible. Have you seen my new headshot? And they hold up their new headshot.
that's
what happened.
So,
I'm like, okay.
That's so L.A., actually, yeah.
Well, so, and then also, you know, you could talk about nothing. They went to the gym every day. They went to the gym every day. And we all were going to the gym every day, but there had to be more in life. So the excitement you think you're going to experience when you get there, that happens. But then it's like, okay, you did that. Do you need to do it again? Do you need it again? And so after doing it again and again and again, I was like, okay, I'm back on this kind of treadmill. So I needed more. And I ended up leaving show business, going back to the University of Georgia, and I won a scholarship to be one of the 25 students from UGA to study abroad at Oxford. So I got to study abroad at Oxford, and there I blossomed. Not only did I engage in everything, have conversations in the debating union, because everyone come around, Gore Vidal, Charlton Heston, John Waters, they're all just coming. Some Michael Moore, they're all coming. And of course, I would stand up and ask questions of them. I asked poor Charlton Heston. He was reading. Oh, my God, Charlton, that was so sad. It was at the end of his life. Charlton Heston's at Oxford reading from a teleprompter. His wife was ill, a little sad she came. And he read a speech prepared for him by the National Rifle Association.
Oh,
and you
my.
Can see these British kids sitting there with their Planet of the Apes album, you know.
Oh, my God.
Solvent Green. They wanted to talk about making a Planet of the Apes, but he read a ridiculous speech where he told them.
NRA.
He said, wait, listen to this. He said, the people, all these kids at Oxford, the people of Los Angeles are safer tonight than the people in Lincolnshire County because our gun. And I'm like, so these kids had nothing. So finally I decided I had to stop it. I raised my hand. I said, oh, Mr. Heston, thank you for coming to speak to the young scholars of Oxford University. I said, you have cited many fights tonight about what could possibly happen in Lincolnshire County. I said, but I have some facts for you. There are presently metal detectors in kindergartens in America, and every 4 seconds, someone is killed by gun violence. What are your plans, and what do you say to these staggering statistics? I gave a bunch of them. And everyone in the room just started beating the floors with their feet, you know. Hey, yeah. It's like, finally someone sends a missile into this frigate. So I said it. I sort of said, what are the plans of the NRA to dismember, disassemble the metal detectors at the entrance of kindergarten doors in America? He said, thank you for asking that question. And because of the horror of mass killings and shootings in America, the NRA has developed Eddie the Eagle. Eddie the Eagle is a large Disney-like character with a big yellow beak. Kind of looks like someone that you know in D.C. if you think about it. But he has this kind of hooked beak. He's got this yellow feather that looks like hair, and he's like this kind of exaggeration of a giant bald eagle. And he said, that's why Eddie the Eagle is going from classroom to classroom, telling the young people, see gun, don't touch, get teacher. And I told my mother that. My mother said, my God, my star is out of touch. Yeah, she loves Charlton Heston, you know, Ben-Hur. You know, I actually talked to Gore Vidal about Ben-Hur. He told me a lot. And about getting around the censors of Hayes during that time of the codes where you couldn't do anything. Stand there and have a Bible in your hand. You thought about kissing, you know, cut.
So after you finished
thank you. Let me get back. So, take me into a tangent. What I did while I was doing the pizza, I started going to all the art galleries. Whenever we go to a city, from Toledo to San Diego, I was finding all the great treasures in America. And some of them are overwhelming, like in Dallas. They have a Gutenberg Bible upstairs in a vitrine in a room by itself for the public to go and look at. I'm like, oh my God, there are only 8 of these in the world. And one is in the New York, in the Dallas Public Library. So, you know, museums like the Kimball in Fort Worth, I would go there and see paintings by Burne Jones and the art that I was becoming to be attracted to, which is, you know, art since it started in the Middle Ages, the 15th century and forward. And I started doing, by postcards at these places. I was going around the country, and I put them all up in my dressing room. I light some tea candles. I put some a bowl of mints or nuts out and bottled water, and I would invite the actors to come view the retrospective of Goya and Man Ray. And they would all come in and go, this is so interesting. What's that painting all about? It's like, oh, that's Goya at the end of his life. See how he paints himself dead. And his doctor, Dr. Descartes, is holding him. He's full of life, as you see, juxtaposition between life and death. You know, we were doing this. I was doing this to entertain myself. I was like painting the gallery postcards from whichever museum I had just visited. If it was late and filled with Fabergé eggs, that night a gallery would be filled with reproductions of Fabergé eggs. So I did this for myself. So finally I went, why did you now go back to school? So I went back to school, found myself at Oxford. Then I applied for Oxford's graduate school because I was graduating that semester. And I didn't get in. And someone told me, why don't you apply to Cambridge? And I applied to Cambridge, and Cambridge is a unique thing. I'm a devout believer in the spirit that created me. And he has facilitated things for me to make things happen. Like, case in point, when Jean Michel, who is a important name in the history of art at Cambridge, saw my application, he immediately became excited because he was working on the image of black in Western art. And when he saw this black eye and saw that I had everything I needed, including my time at Oxford, he reached out to me, but he didn't tell me that. He said, what he told me was, you need to do an original dissertation, and it can't be about an American because there's no one on a staff who can help you with that. So it had to be a European artist or, you know, someone in the department. So what he was trying to do was to get to maneuver me to saying, hey, why don't I be your student? You supervise me and tell me the way to go. So once he put it before me, I had to figure out the way I wanted to go, and I realized that I wanted to write on the Pre-Raphaelites and Dante Gabriel Rossetti, namely his models. It was my belief of all the things I was reading about them and how they were first washerwomen, and now they were some of the most celebrated women in visual culture, that it was like a Cinderella story, like you wouldn't believe. And I realizing that it was a Cinderella story, I figured out that they were the world's first supermodels. So with that original idea of how my argument of how the Pre-Raphaelite models of Dante Gabriel Rossetti and a few other of those Pre-Raphaelite painters as their muse made them so famous and popular, even Gilbert and Sullivan, when they wrote Iolanthe, they designed the maiden's outfits to look like Jane Morris, who was one of Rossetti's most known seen models. You mentioned Andrew Lloyd Webber. When I was at Cambridge, the Royal Academy, a show was supposed to come from Greece, and they reneged. They didn't send the art. So, you know, in a panic, the Royal Academy got in touch with Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber, and he lent his vast collection of Pre-Raphaelite paintings. And it's one thing when you see a collector finally show the world, which has been, you know, not seen forever or ever. You were seeing paintings of these women by Rossetti that had not, they were in the catalog of his art, but there were no images or reproductions of what they may look like because of the time period they were sold and never put on market again. And so he brought up all these treasures that were just, I mean, filled every room. So
that's
that
amazing.
Was my dissertation to get myself into Cambridge. And, you know, I mean, I could go deeper into, you know, dinners with Prince Charles, singing for Prince Philip. That moment right there was one of the best moments of my life because it was Thanksgiving 2003. They invited all the American students who were at Cambridge to come and have a Thanksgiving dinner. But also what it was about were the Gates Scholars. They had sent out the invitation of this affair at the graduate union. And once you got there, you realized that you were seated, you're waiting for dinner to start, or about 400 students there in another room. The Gates Scholars were there, so they all filled in, and Prince Philip was with them because the Royals come around with Royal University a lot because they have to raise money. In 2000, Parliament made the smart decision of going, wait a minute, you're Oxford and Cambridge and Edinburgh, get your own money, and they cut them off from public funds. So the Royals come around a lot, you know, asking American and Chinese students to leave everything if they'd like. You know, the entire state, you know, the Cambridge, you know, they're doing what they do. It's been there for over 800 years. Anyway, where was I in this story?
We were
I was going to say Philip. So they come up to me and they say, we want to do a little thing. We would like to sing the American national anthem for all the people here, including you. They're from America. She said, we've talked about it because we've heard you sing. There's a young girl who sings beautifully. She has a soprano, and Charlie Smith is a beautiful alto. Why don't y'all get together and work this thing out? So we got together. They were two small, beautiful ladies. I'm now lifelong friends with Charlie Smith. So it was an I. She lives in New Hampshire now with her husband, but she's half British, half American, but she has a very distinctive British accent, even one of kind of London. We rehearsed, and I started the singing with the beginning of the anthem, and then after I got through, oh, say, can you see? Then the next girl come in. So as I'm singing the entrance, with everyone else watching us sing this thing, I go, oh, say, can you see? And all of a sudden, Prince Philip jumps to his feet by himself. And he looked so proud, so mad, you could almost see epaulets appear on his shoulder. It was like this thing that was in him since he was a young man. Even once he heard one of these anthems, he was compelled to stand up. So he stood up, and all of a sudden you could see the do this, but oh shit, we better get up. And they all sit up.
Wow.
But watching the man whose son will be king, the prince consort, stand for my voice, that burned off every nightmare that I ever experienced in the Deep South, from people hurling all kinds of slurs at me. And that one moment, all of that disrespect was gone.
Wow. Well, listen.
I want to talk quickly
before we run out of time. I want to talk about this next chapter in your career and your life. Tell everybody you've got this great home in Eugene, Oregon. I love the fact that you're here on the Pacific Northwest with us.
We love
it. What's this next chapter look like for you?
Well, what's happening right now is, I'm writing right now. I've been working on a musical about Burt Bacharach for a while now.
Oh,
and
wow.
He's on board. I just have to keep writing it and fixing it and writing it and fixing it, because some of your imagination, the fact that I've actually been on stage and, you know, almost been killed by sets and I almost died on the stage of the Alliance Theater doing the Threepenny Opera, sitting beside Kay McClellan, who was starring in everything from City of Angels and Into the Woods. She was playing Polly Peachum. I was playing the Reverend Kemble, getting ready to marry MacHeath and Polly Peachum in the sewers of New York and not the sewers of London. And as we sat there frozen, as these gangsters performed the army song where they're regaling their heroic past, these panels come down that show that kind of socialist images of men going forward with a ball fist and a rifle in a hand, that kind of stuff. You know, it looked very much like, oh, it's like World War II kind of stuff. Anyway, as at the end of the song, these batons fly up, going straight up, but they're weighted with metal rods on the very bottom. And as it goes up, they become unbalanced, and both banners tilt, and the rods go down right into the table, 4 inches from the top of both of our heads. Everyone in the audience screamed. They realized that it wasn't meant to happen, and one of the gangsters ran and pulled it up and ran it off stage. The reason I tell you that story is, as I read through my writings of the musical about Burt Bacharach, there are things that go, wait a minute, that has to work. So how do I do that costume change? So that's what's going on. I know how to do it, what needs to be done. It's just doing it that way. So that's,
right.
I've been working on that for a while. And there's also an opportunity that I might be, because we don't know when people are going to be able to perform again,
mm-hmm.
teach an acting class here at one of the local colleges. They've asked me to make an application, which I'm so happy to do. And if I'm blessed, in January, I'll be teaching beginning acting at a local college. And
oh, my
also,
God.
I have
You'll be so great at that.
Yeah. I mean, really, I mean, if I can teach beginning acting, believe me. You know, where it deals with all of the stage direction. What's up stage right? What's down stage left? What's the finale? What's the orchestra? What's the proscenium? You know, these things. You know, what's a monologue? So, you know, I'm praying for it. I'm striving for it. And if it doesn't happen, that means that God wants something else to happen. So I'm feeling much encouraged, because they have actually approached me and asked that I make this application. But, in fact, I'm smart enough to know that if someone comes in with a PhD in acting from Notre Dame, I get why they didn't choose me. So, but, you know, you put your best foot forward, and hopefully it will bring you a favorable return.
Absolutely. Well, everyone, I want everyone to know that they can follow, you can follow Calvin on Twitter. I love this. It's at Bernini 2001, and Instagram is at calvin.o.smith, and he's also on Facebook. You can also
007, calvin.o.smith 007. I'm a secret agent, you see.
Oh, there we go. Yes, 007. Yes,
007.
Yes, yes. It would help if I put my glasses on. That would help. Calvin, listen. We want you to come back on, because we need about 3 hours with you. And
absolutely. I mean, I haven't told you about the ghost of Ma Rainey there.
Oh my God.
And,
I want you to write a book. I want a book.
Well, you know,
I've actually
started making some notes, because sometimes I sit up and go, "Oh my God, that happened!"
Right.
And we live to tell. Well, thank you so much, Jasper.
And we're still here. We're still here. Damn it! Yes, we're all still here.
So,
that's important.
Yeah, we are still here. And we buried a lot of people. I mean, the way the AIDS epidemic ravaged Hollywood and New York, I mean, it's really unfathomable. And that our leaders, much like this, It took a long time to come around to say this is a virus that killed people. I put a thing on Facebook right when it started. I said, you can see now that this virus, which has killed all these people, wasn't sent by God. You know, because I heard all kinds of preachers say that previous viruses were sent to kill those people in New Orleans. But they preached it from the pulpit. And I told him now, it's like, now that your aunt is suffering from it and, you know, your cousin down the street may have died from it, you see that this isn't a plague sent to kill you by God, right? Yeah. So, yeah, oh, no, this isn't a plague, but that was. Yeah, yeah. So it was unfortunate that people were scorned and thrown out of the apartments and fired from jobs. That's what the whole premise of the wonderful film by Zemeckis, Philadelphia. You know, you see this guy being fired because they realized he was living a lifestyle that they didn't approve with. And okay, would you like to be treated that way?
Right. I know.
So, yeah, I we lost so many artists.
Well, like we, Ralph and I said in the beginning, you know, we feel like we've turned a corner, that the democracy is being saved at least. Let's try to get the car back on the tracks. And, you know,
Yes. We're
going to send Biden and Harris all our love. But listen, Calvin, it's been great to talk to you. And everyone, please follow Calvin on social media. We will find out as soon as we know when the pay-per-view is going to happen with Songs
yes,
of the
yes,
World.
Yes.
We'll post that as well.
Perfect. Yes,
all
Maui
right,
Academy
listen.
Of Performing Arts. Thank you so much, Mr. and Mr. Cole.
Thank you. Thank you, Calvin.
Thank you.
You are a gem.
Yes,
yes.
I must come back and tell stories of being backstage at the Schubert in New Haven and what happened there at midnight.
Yes.
One night.
Oh, my God.
Listen,
we can't wait.
I mean, it gives me chill. Have a wonderful day and keep doing
Thank
what you.
You
do. Don't change a thing.
Bye,
Thank
Calvin.
You, Calvin.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Wow. And that was just part one, Ralph.
I know. Yeah. You know, I couldn't help but think you created Breaking the News and you used to have Entertainment Dish with Dara. I was like, there has to be something for Calvin because already I want to hear about the backstage story at the Schubert Theater. Cause you know, I love stuff like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's why I was thinking, I think Calvin has, so this should be put into a book for sure. And imagine him doing the audio books and getting to
I know,
read the book.
God, I just thought of it. Yes, exactly. No, he was everything you said. He is a live wire, and it is very exciting to have someone unabashed like that going through life, you know. And you know, it's really heartwarming and refreshing to hear someone having a thriving career with no management and, you know, kind of just doing it like, well, yeah, didn't really have time for that because I was on to my next show, you know. And I know, and that's not poo-pooing what you do as a manager or any agent out there.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Because as he said, you know, yeah, to take the TV and film route, you do need that management team. You know, it doesn't always happen just, you know, stepping along. I mean, it does with some people, but that's not usually the norm. But he's just refreshing like that because – he, you know, like he said, he's always had this spiritual side to him that has always guided him and shown him the way. So it was nice to hear all of that.
Yeah. And what I loved about it, you know, it's, we didn't get too much into talking about being a gay black kid in the South. And in many ways, it's like you, Ralph, you know how you talk about how your parents instilled all this confidence in you as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Calvin has a twin, identical twin brother, by the way, who is Calvin has a twin brother who's a preacher in Tucson, Arizona, who
mm-hmm.
we did not even talk about. But he comes from a very educated family and a family that, you know, also instilled great confidence in him. And it's what I love about him also is he's an example. What I was trying to ask is, I don't know if the kind of career he had, if someone starting today could have that career. And what I mean mm-hmm. by that is, it's even brought, even theater now, even touring companies, even if you never want to do TV and film, it's such a corporate thing. And
right.
I don't know if those referrals work anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Even,
I know what you're saying.
Even if Kathy Rigby referred him, nowadays he would have to still jump through like 20 different.
Well, even back then he had to prove himself for the audition,
right.
You know, even with Kathy and her husband, they couldn't say, they were the stars and producer. They couldn't say, we want him in the show. It was like,
right.
You know, it was a great story, you know, but I was like, they're saying, we'd really like to see you at the audition. I was like, where's the offer, girl? You know?
and there's something to be said about being young also, because, you know, when we're in our 20s and 30s, at least I was all about ambition. It's like, tell me, you know, just tell me and I'll be there. Like, he just,
mm-hmm.
they may have said that to him, like, not knowing that he would actually get on a plane and fly to LA, you know? So,
right.
A lot of it is his own chutzpah, but he's, you know, he's traveled the world and he's had this amazing career. And I love the fact that he would be. Can you imagine, like, what a great acting coach he would be in college for this young
man? When he said that, I thought, oh, God, they'll be so lucky to have you. But to your point, you're right. It probably is not the same kind of way. It's just the way you say about TV and film. It's like,
yeah,
you know. You don't have a quote anymore. It's take it or leave it, you know.
You know, when I talk to you about when I started out here, the way a casting director would just cast me on the show. There was no even audition. It was just, Jasper, can Jasper, I have a little part next week. Can Jasper be on Married with Children?
Look, you've just booked 3 TV shows, so that's during a pandemic with a billion self-tapes being submitted. But can you imagine if casting directors could do now what they used to do for you?
Yeah.
You'd be just like, you'd be working all the time. It would just be.
And the sad part is they do all they can do, you know. They're so, like, hampered now. They've been reduced to basically, like, I hate to say it, but they're like secretarial. They're just like putting lists together and submitting self-tapes. You know, they don't get acknowledged, and I don't feel like their opinion is as well respected.
Matters as much anymore, you know, and
yeah.
I'm sure they're embarrassed and they feel badly when actors of their choice that they know can do it and have the experience and credits to do it gets overlooked by some newcomer because this is what corporate or the producer wants, you know? And so it is hard. It's harder on everybody. You know, it's just like, we are definitely in a new time. It's like, you know, everything is still going to be upbeat and buoyant, but a lot of people have to wake up, you know, like just listening to Barbara Ferrer, the health director, you
mm-hmm.
know, there's, you know, if people aren't more careful, we're going to have to go on another close down again. It's like, if people aren't more careful, they're not going to be careful. What's going to make them change now, Barbara? Just do what
they're
you need
to
do.
They're not going to be careful.
Yeah. So just make the close, the step down, stay at home, the new one, just start it now. It's like when they say, oh, we're going to be starting that on Saturday. It's like, start it the fuck now, you know, or I see, you know, to give some people time to prepare, but it's like,
no.
California, for as progressive as we are, they're not using common sense again. It's like, it's not going to get better. It's only getting worse. So start.
And the same people that were careful from the beginning will be the same ones being careful. The ones that were not careful are not going to change.
Exactly.
So
it's going to perpetuate itself until someone has the chutzpah to just go, look, if you're out in the street past 10 o'clock, you're getting arrested. You know, something drastic has got to happen. But
well, remember, it's all politics. So Gavin Newsom has to think about being reelected. So it's all, every governor has to think about who's going to vote for me or who's going to take it out against me when it comes time to be reelected. You know, and what a lot of people don't understand, yes, California is a blue state, but it's a heavy, heavy, some of the powerful red cities in California are very wealthy. A lot of the Silicon Valley, where all the tech companies are, most of Orange County, you know, a lot of that is Republican and red. Mm-hmm. You notice how Orange County, they're the main one that won't follow the rules?
I know.
Yeah. There's a Mexican restaurant in Orange County right now that prides itself on, they have a sign, wear mask, no service. And they violated all the rules. They've been fined over and over again, and they don't care. And they profiled them on Spectrum News last week, and there they all – they interviewed the customers and like, it's my right as an American. I don't have to wear a mask if I don't want to. And so there they are, Orange County. You guys, if you want to have a COVID Mexican meal, go on down to this restaurant in Orange County. You can Google it and find the name of it. Just don't get anywhere near Ralph and I.
Yeah, that's what's really scary. That's why I'm always defending my plight, saying that everywhere I go, everyone's wearing a mask. Like, I'd be really nervous if I was in a situation where I saw people weren't wearing them, you know, but at least everywhere I go, you know, but anywho, you know, she was saying, because Chris, it's going to be hard for Christmas and New Year's because we might be on a lockdown then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're saying don't even do anything for Thanksgiving. It's easy for me to talk, you know, what my lifestyle is with Willis
right.
and me. So it's easy for me to talk, but for people that have planned this for months ahead and now they have to tell Aunt Helen and Uncle Bill, like, no, you can't come and we're canceling Thanksgiving, people, I guess, are not going to do that. It's just going to be a smorgasbord.
But again, to me, it's just the selfishness of Americans, though. I mean, I hate to say it. Like, we are just the most spoiled, rotten people sometimes. Like, we want it now, and we're not going to do, and we want to have our food, and grandma wants to, fuck grandma. She, you know what, grandma better keep her ass at home also, or she'll be, you know, there are people in nursing homes right now that still have to be talked through the glass, you know, you can't even go see them. So I just get so irritated. And I'm going to close out the show by saying this. Look, all you people who still support Trump, and you still want to say that the election is a fraud, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. We don't need your support. We just proved to the world that the Democrats can get a president without the fucking support of the Republicans. So all of you can go fuck yourself. And I don't give a fuck if you come over to our side ever again. I don't want to hear any more from you. Biden has won. So fuck the fuck off, you inbred, just fucked up people. Okay, but otherwise, Ralph, I thought that would be a good spiritual Christian way to end the show, since I can't post that on Facebook.
Well, I think it's a vibrant way to end the show, and that's why it's called your show. So thank you for that. They were impassioned words that a lot of people can really live by.
And I did not mention decapitation one time. Although I think you can read between the lines.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
oh,
listen, Ralph, thank you as always for another great show. Everybody, we will be back next Thursday, same time, same place. And by the way, you can check out BS Podcast at, well, it's on right now, Mike Manning. And by the way, Ralph, I got to see Mike Manning on the Bay, and I also checked him out on Days of Our Lives today, and he was fantastic. So everyone, support our guests when they come on, but better yet, support Ralph and I. We'll see everyone next week. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.